Hi, I'm the next speaker. My name is Thomas Munn. Brief introduction. I do pretty much Linux security full-time for, we're small trading firms on the Option Exchange in Chicago. And I'm going to be showing you how to do a IP Chains Linux firewall. I have essentially no slides because it's completely a tutorial. You're going to be seeing what I do on the system from beginning with basically compiling the kernel with the proper options, choosing your network cards, the supported platforms, a simple rule set and how to get your IP Chains firewall to automatically load at system boot up. There's a lot of information that I'm going to be going through. I'm going to be going fairly fast because unfortunately I only have 50 minutes to do probably 2 or 3 hours worth of configuration. Basically I have a text file which lists a lot of what I'm talking about. It'll be available on my website. I'll start it with the beginning and repeat it several times. My website is actually I'll just type it on the screen. It'll be easier. Just a sec. We're almost there. It's only a P75, so you'll have to excuse the slowness. Actually, let's be root. Okay, my URL. Oh, no, it's not. It's over there. Oh, it's too low. Shift, tilde. I unfortunately can't use both, so I'm either that one or that one. And tilde, where the hell? No, it's not. It's right up there. There you go. So you can't see what I'm typing. Okay, that's good. That's good to know. Okay, I'm going to start off with the... What? It's clear? Okay, I'm going to start out with basic kernel configuration. So I'm going to start doing some make menu config. So just a moment. Actually, before I start all this, let me just explain the basic setup hardware-wise, what you're going to be doing. Hardware-wise, you're basically going to need a huge recipe. You need one 486 with at least 16 megs of RAM, two network cards, preferably preferred by Linux. If you want cheap ones, I find the 3C509Bs are really good, and they can usually be had for about $10 each. Avoid Realtek 3189s. They suck, and they don't auto-negotiate. If you're just using a 100-meg network, they're fine. But the Realtek, they're in a lot of, like, NetSurfer, and they're the $10 network cards, pretty much. I find that they do not auto-negotiate properly, and I do not recommend using them as network cards. I tend to stick with 3COMs. On an old system, you know, just go 3C509B or whatever. So anyway, so you need the two NICs. You need the hard drive of at least 500 megabytes. You can get them smaller, but it's kind of a pain in the ass. You also need a CD-ROM, IDE preferably, and you don't need it, but it's $40, and it's easier than doing an NFS install. And basically, some time. Those are the basic ingredients you need. Now, the distribution I'm doing this with is SUSE. I know everyone says, well, Red Hat or blah. Red Hat doesn't work in half of the configurations that I've used it with, and I really hate things that don't work. So I tend to use SUSE because it detects the hardware the best. It seems to have the best video drivers, not that you need one for a firewall. And it also has a really nice default DMZ setup, so you can set up a fairly robust system that is pretty good. Now, another one that I recently came across that, for those of you that don't mind not having an administrative GUI, is Trustix Secure Linux. It's www.trustix.com. You can download the ISO on that. It's really nice because everything's turned off by default. Every single distribution that I have seen has a lot of stupid things turned on to begin with, for instance, RPC and whatnot. And I'm not going to get into hardening the host here, but note that you should harden the host, and that's another talk. Simply just the simplest thing you do is go to the inetd.conf and just comment out everything you don't need. And by the way, don't use Telnet, use SSH. That's my 30 seconds of security. So anyway, so I'm using SUSE. I'm assuming that I've already secured the box. I've applied the latest patches. The hardware is more or less working. Before I begin with all the kernel-level stuff, I just want to say some weird things with the networking. If you're using ISA network cards, you're going to need to pass kernel parameters to the kernel when you first boot up. And I'll show you how to do that in YAST. But if you like boot up and you're not using modules to load the kernel drivers, which I highly recommend you don't do, because the problem with kernel modules is they're loading and unloading all the time. And with something like a network card, I find the operation is more reliable to basically compile the stuff in the kernel. So anyways, I know I'm going kind of fast, and I will be open for questions at the end, but I have so much to cover, I'm not going to have a lot of times for questions. Anyway, so we're going to go to the user SRC Linux directory. Actually, we're not going to go to user SRC Linux. We're just going to go to user SRC. Now, you're going to see here a file called linux-2216ow1.diff. This is a very cool file. Solar Designer has designed some kernel patches, which basically, not to say completely eliminate, but largely get rid of a large class of attacks that are called buffer overflows. It prevents people from using user executable stack space, which will get rid of most of your rootkits and your root compromises. Not all. I mean, there's still heap and all that other stuff for those of you that went to the other ones. But this file, basically, to apply, I'm assuming you've gotten the most recent kernel, which is 2.2.16 as of the minute, and you're going to apply. Basically, you have to patch the kernel. You've untarred, bzipped it, and you've got a Linux directory. You have to have a Linux directory, and you have to have this file in user SRC. If you put it anywhere else, it won't work. You'll just get all kinds of errors, and you'll be frustrated as hell. Anyways, to do that, to patch the kernel, I'm not going to actually type it in, but here's the command: patch minus p0 less than li, and of course I don't like typing things out, so I hit tab, and then unfortunately didn't hit the dash there. Just dash.
That's not a zero.
Minus p0. Didn't see the zero there. There. Patch minus p0 less than linux-2216ow1.diff. This file is listed on the references in the text file, which is available on my website. I'll put it on the screen at the end. But basically what this does is it patches the kernel. It takes too long, so I'm not going to do it. And when you do it, cd Linux, and we're going to do make menu config. Because, of course, everyone knows you don't put X Windows on a firewall. Just a second. It'll bring up this piece of information right here. You should know that if you're using kernel 2.4, this is significantly different. You'll notice down here, security options. That's a result of the patch. If you hadn't done the patch, you wouldn't have this menu. Now, I press Enter here, and you'll see this one right here, non-executable stack area. Well, I don't know about that, so I hit the question mark key, and unfortunately on a libretto, they're kind of hard to find, and you'll see it tells you exactly what it is. Oh, most buffer exploits are based on overriding the functions, blah, 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 blah. And so if you have any questions on any of the options that you're doing, you can hit a question mark after selecting the item that you want to do. It's really nice because the authors generally are very, Solar Designer especially, is very good in documenting his patches. But anyways, there's auto-detect GCC trampolines. Basically, if you're like a Uber hacker and compile your programs a certain way, this will make them more secure. I just put it in. This is really nice. The next option that you see here, restricted links in temp and restriction FIFOs in temp. A lot of exploits rely on symlinking through temp and then doing things they're not supposed to in other parts of the file system. Well, this prevents it. You can't even do it. I think my single favorite thing, though, is this one. Restricted proc. What that does is, like on a normal Unix system, you do a PSAX or AUX or EF, whatever, depending on which Unix you're using. Well, we're using Linux. And it shows all the processes. It shows you every single process on the system. If you install that thing, the only person who sees all the processes is root. So if someone breaks into your system through, say, Apache, through a bad web server, all they can see are Apache's processes. They can see whatever you're running. You know, are you running some background daemon? What modules do you have loaded? They cannot see any processes except for their own, which from a system security point of view is a very cool thing. So anyway, I was going to mention that. Special handling of FD0, 1, and 2, I'm just going to do a real shift just show you. It's just certain types of things that the C library does, and this explains what it is. I'm not going to bother because it's in it. Anyways, as for the one down here, I never do it. This one's kind of nice because all those little programs, they just kind of litter memory everywhere, and they can leave passwords and stuff in memory that people can snoop. Well, this will just destroy memory segments that aren't in use. This is not really even related to IP chains, but they're very nice and cool things to make your firewall a little harder to crack. Not impossible, just harder. Anyway, so that's the security options. Now we're actually going to go into the IP chains related options. A lot of this I'm just going to kind of blow through because I'm going to figure you know how to compile a kernel. And if you don't, well, unfortunately, I can't teach you now. Prompt for development and incomplete drivers, always. Don't choose the wrong processor. If you have a Pentium 2, use MTRR. And if you have lots of memory, well, obviously increase it. But if you have that much memory on a firewall, well, you've got more money than I do. Loadable module support you'll need. This one is only if you're using old modules or third-party modules that don't compile for your kernel. Kernel module loader you want. If you don't have it, it will not load modules properly, and it loads them automatically. Very nice thing to have. General setup. This is kind of important. You need networking support. PCI, just, you know, that's all the stuff. I don't really care about that. I usually get rid of the support for the 8.out and MISC because we're not doing, it's a firewall. It's just doing packet filtering and other stuff like that. Parallel port support is for the paranoid of you who actually want to print out their log files to a printer. You don't need it, but you can have it if you want to basically use a line printer if certain people do things that are bad on your firewall. It's a permanent record that can't be altered. Advanced powered management support you should never put on because it will make your firewall shut down. Don't do it. Just turn it off. I just have these on because it's a laptop and all this other stuff. Anyway, so you don't want any of those. These things you don't want. All these things right here. All these things right there. Anyways, again, I'm going to go down to plug-and-play support. If you're using plug-and-play, I personally don't recommend it, but in the case of the 3C905, and I may get my things all dyslexic on you, basically it can work in plug-and-play mode, and it can work in where you tell it where you want it. And I recommend telling you where you want it because the plug and pray stuff, that's a card from the era of plug and pray where it didn't work very well. And it may work, but it may not. So I recommend in the case of the 3C905, there's a special utility you get, and you set the settings, and you tell it the IRQ and the IO address and the DMA, and, well, not DMA, but anyways, and all the things you need for the card. And do it that way. But if you want, you can actually use this instead of ISA-PNP, which is the Linux utility which normally does it. I don't know how well it works. I've never used it. I just mentioned it. Block devices. Obviously, you need IDE disk support unless you're using SCSI. I turn off all the other stuff because you really don't need it. You need this and this. This one especially, if you're using an old 486, their data would go bad. And if you have some of the older ones, and just again do a question mark and it'll tell you if you have a question on an option. I always use DMA by default on the IDE, or your hard drive will be slower than crap, and you'll use lots of CPU cycles when you do disk accesses. So turn it on, unless you have a really old hard drive, and then you probably shouldn't. Loopback device support, that's just allows 127.0.0.1. It allows you to do testing of firewall rules. It's kind of nice to have. I put it in as a module. A network block device, that's kind of a more advanced thing, but I put it in. It lets you kind of take a virtual block device or like a file area and pretend like it's a network device. Lots of interesting applications. I don't have time to get into it. Finally, again, parallel port IDE. I do it because on this thing, I don't have a CD-ROM drive, and it allows me to update my installation. Again, you don't need these. These are just different kinds of things that probably shouldn't be on a firewall. Networking options. This is probably the most important section. This thing is not set up as a firewall, but I'm going to just check the options that you need. You want packet socket. You want kernel network socket. You obviously, I like routing messages because it lets you to do some really cool filtering, which we're not going to get in now, but it's just cool to have. I like to have network device emulation. Again, it lets you test your firewall if you don't have two network cards. Network firewalls, you have to have network firewalls. Your firewall will not work if you do not. So you have to have network firewalls. You have no choice. Socket filtering, I like to have. Basically, if you don't know what it is, it allows you to do, socket filtering, blah, blah, blah. You just see the networking fact. Unix domain sockets, you need. TCP/IP networking, well, if you're on TCP/IP network, you don't have it, it doesn't work. Multicasting, you may or may not need. If you're doing real audio or something like that, this is multicasting to a large number of clients, you probably want it. Otherwise, you probably don't need it. Advanced router, if you're wanting to basically limit, say, Aunt Mildred to only have 300K, 300K a second, well, you can do that with that kind of stuff. Firewalling, I like to have it. Obviously, you have to have it. Kernel-level auto configuration, if you're using a boot P server, DHCP, those kinds of things. IP network, packet link network device, I really don't know what that is, and I don't worry about it. Actually, I think it's not like EtherTap. It kind of lets you tap into the network in real time. Transparent proxy is nice. It lets things just go out as if you're really on the internet. I turn that on. IP masquerading, probably you're going to need, unless you have your own class, IP legal. I basically recommend on the internal network using a 192.168, simply because it's non-routable, and it prevents people from hijacking your packets and sending them out. Or if you need a really large address space, you can use 10.0.0.0. But don't use like somebody else's, like a 192.22.blah, because if Linux or something else leaks, your packets may do bad things to other people. Now, they may not, but some ISPs are dumb and don't filter those kinds of things. So I always say on the internal network, in other words, the machines on the safe side of the firewall, always use 192.168. Always, always, always. In fact, what I usually use for the addressing scheme, 192.168.1.1 is the firewall, and then, and that's the gateway, or .0.1, and then you just have your machines on .0, and unless you've got a router and things like that, and we won't get into that. Optimizes router, not host. If you're just going to be doing, we need to turn that on. Here's some protocol-specific things. These things are very cool. ICMP masquerading allows ICMP stuff to work really nicely, trace route ping. It probably does more things. I really haven't used it. I just put it in. Special module support. You probably want this. Basically, what this puts in the there's one to make FTP work in active mode. If you don't install this module, and I'll show you that later because I've got a script that actually loads the modules you need. You want these modules basically. Just put them in. IP mask, IP auto forward. That allows you to forward. Say you've got a web server on the inside, 192.168.blah.blah, and you don't want to host the web server on your firewall, and you just kind of want to redirect things to the internal network. Not that I recommend it, especially if you're running Microsoft, but if you've got a reasonably secure machine and are confident that the web server is going to be hard to exploit, you can actually make it look like it appears on the firewall when it's really on the inside. It's kind of a neat trick. IP mask support, you're going to need it. Basically, you don't have to have it, but I like to have it because it allows you to do the forwarding between the interfaces if you need it. You probably don't need it, though, if you don't really want it. IPFW, this stuff basically allows you to do classifications of packets, and if you have some complicated network stuff, which we're not going to get into, it can do some really neat things. It basically lets you just have additional information to specify connection parameters for, say, Telnet and FTP and whatnot, and to allow your processor, especially if you're on a limited bandwidth connection, to optimize for the kind of connection that you're doing. Optimizes router, not host. I recommend using this because pretty much your firewall is acting as a router, especially if you're doing NAT. Again, the one I'm doing is NAT. I recommend NAT simply because of the additional security. If you do have your own IP addresses, you don't need it, and you don't need a lot of the stuff that I'm showing you if you're not doing NAT. IP tunneling, that allows you to tunnel other protocols like IPX and God forbid, NetBIOS through your firewall to external sites. I don't usually use it. This is for Cisco, don't worry about it. IP aliasing is if you want to bind more than one IP address to a single interface, say you want it to be .1 and .2, and you've got a web server running on .2, but you don't want it to look like it's the firewall. Well, that's what aliasing is for. ARP you probably don't need. TCP SYN cookies you want. This will make it very difficult for people to do the Smurf attack and other kinds of attacks against you. Turn it on. Reverse ARP you probably don't need. Large windows you probably don't need because you probably have a machine with more than 16 megs of memory. If you have less than 16 megs of memory, use it. IPv6, don't waste your time with. I don't bother with IPX. I don't bother with AppleTalk. You don't need that. You don't need that. You don't need that. WAN router, you don't need. Fast switching, you don't need. And if you do need it, well, you're richer than I am. CPU is too slow to handle full bandwidth. This is very possible. If you're doing a 100 meg link with, say, a 386, you're probably going to need to turn this on. QoS and fair queuing, I'm just going to show you. I'm not actually going to get into it. There's all these different kinds of packet classifiers, which allow you to do really spiffy things with the packets and filtering and whatnot. Again, this is a newbie class, and I haven't done it. And I've seen neat stuff done with it, but again, this is just to show you that it's there. We're keeping going down. We're going to exit now. Telephony support, you don't need to worry about. SCSI support, if you've got a SCSI drive, put it in. I2O, don't worry about. Networking device. If you've got a laptop, you need to have networking device, but you only use PCMCIA. You don't need some of the actual hardware drivers, which we'll get into later. Dummy network driver, basically that, again, allows you to play around with the firewall as if you had a network without having a network card. It's kind of nice. Bonding, basically, if you are fortunate enough to have an ISP, so you've got two modems and you want to bond them together, and the ISP is your buddy down the street or something, it allows you to combine two 56K connections as if they're 112K. Again, the ISP has to support it or it won't work. I put it in just as a module because if you don't, modules are not expensive unless you load them. You also need EtherTAP is really cool. Again, it's not something that I'm going to get into. It's some of those other options that we put in you need in order for this to work. It allows you to kind of have like an equivalent tap into your network so you can actually filter based on packet content, actually data content inside of the packet. It's a sniffer, essentially, built into the kernel. Ethernet. Probably most of you are going to be using this. I personally am going to recommend the 3COM card because that's the one I've always used, and I use a 3C509579. And you can load it as a module, or you can load it as a... The M means basically that it's a module, and the little star means that it's actually loaded into the kernel. I recommend that you load it in the actual kernel. However, you will have to pass additional parameters to LILO, which I will show you in a second after we get done with all this. Anyways, you compile that in. These ones are the bad ones, the Realtek. They're okay if you're just doing 10, but if you're involving any kind of switching between 10 and 100, they do not switch properly, and they just are unreliable. This one, and make sure that you undo this unless you've got other ones, because you don't want to put more things in your kernel than you need to. I mean, in this day and age of 20 megabyte machines or gigabyte, whatever, you're still limited to a total of 1 megabyte for your kernel image. If your kernel image exceeds 1 megabyte, it won't load, and it'll say kernel panic, and you'll have a useless piece of computer unless you've been smart enough to save the old kernel. So be warned, if you put too many things in, your kernel will get too big, and it won't work anymore. Anyways, and that's the end of that. FDDI, I like to put PPP in, just because for those of you who are probably not fortunate enough to have the Ethernet, you'll need it. It allows you to do the point-to-point protocol support. And you may need it if those of you who have the new DSL with a point-to-point protocol over Ethernet. It actually does a virtual point-to-point protocol over Ethernet. I'm not going to get into that. I haven't dealt with it, but I just mention it again as a simple got you. If you have point-to-point protocol over Ethernet, you will need to put this in. CSLIP is nice. It compresses your things and makes your slow connections a little faster. Keep Alive and Line Fill. Again, they just basically keep things alive, and it'll send out the occasional packet to keep things up. God help you if you have Token Ring. amateur radio, don't worry about. IRDI, don't worry about. We're going to go down to file systems. I just mention this because I always like to have these two. I know most people say, well, why would you want them? Well, it's awfully convenient if you're wanting to say, just real quickly, mount a DOS disk, and you don't happen to have one formatted in EXT2, which is not something I commonly do. And you can just mount them very quickly. It's also convenient for those brain-dead CD-ROM applications that when you burn a CD and it burns them with Joliet and you're trying to do a Linux installer or look from an install CD, so it allows you to actually read Joliet, especially these, specifically these two things. NTFS I like just because you don't need it, but it allows you to – you just probably don't want it on a firewall. I just put it in because it's nice to be able to read those disks. PTS you need, QNX you don't need. ROM is cool if you actually want to make, this is again just a neat idea, you can actually make a firewall that boots off of a chip. You need to do this if your firewall is going to be booting off of a chip. I'm not going to get into how to do that. You have to have this one. If you don't have second extended firewall support, your firewall isn't booting. UFS you don't need. NFS you probably should avoid, very insecure, very bad. You may need it initially, though, if you're doing an NFS install, but you wouldn't be at this point if you did, though. Partition types, I don't worry about. NSL, the only thing you have to know about the natives, I put this in because if you're trying to mount Microsoft CDs on your firewall, which occasionally you may do, you need this because it uses, unfortunately, I can't remember what it's the 16-bit thing they use in Java, and basically they encode their characters in a weird way, and if you don't have these modules, you won't be able to read the coding. Unicode, that's what it is. It basically puts Unicode support into your CD-ROM. Anyways, it's just a trivial thing. Anyways, you've saved everything. You're done. Actually, you're not done yet. Almost done. Console drivers, let's look through. Nothing spectacular. Be careful if you're trying to put it in VGA mode, because if you don't use the right card, you don't have a display. Sound you don't need, unless you want to have a firewall that actually yells when people do certain kinds of things. You can actually put a sound card in your firewall. Kind of a neat thing if you have it watching a log file with, say, a Perl script, and if it says a deny, and you can have it say, someone is trying to attack you. I don't know. For those of you that like to be reactive, it's an advantage. Kernel hacking you don't need, and I always like to save my configuration to an alternate file because sometimes I screw up and lose my settings. Anyways, I'm going to save it to an alternate file. I just say hello, and you save your kernel configuration to a file named hello in the Linux directory. Unfortunately, it's a P75, so it does take a little while. Okay, we're going to exit this now, and it'll say, do you want to save your kernel configuration? We'll say yes, unless you want to lose everything you just did. It saves it. And to compile your kernel, before you compile your kernel, I always recommend doing this because it's really easy. CP, you probably want to write this down. Sure. I keep forgetting that I get down. C-L-E-A-R. Okay. CP slash boot, if you're using a modern version of Linux, slash VM Linux, which is your current kernel, slash dev slash FD0. What that does is it copies that file to your floppy disk. Make sure you have a disk in the drive or it will not work. And basically makes a boot floppy. So if your kernel panics because you screwed up, you put the floppy in and it'll boot your old system. Otherwise, you're going to have to basically, you're out of luck. Yes, sir? Oh, sure. Yeah, I didn't. There you go. CP. Okay. Yeah. There you go. That line basically is your, I call it fire insurance. If your kernel doesn't work, it'll allow the system to boot. So basically do that. Save that floppy somewhere safe. And now what I'm going to do is I'm not actually going to do it because I don't want to risk this computer not working because I'm actually, this is a new kernel. You do make dep, make clean, semicolon. This is basically just doing one thing on a lot of line. Make bzlilo. Oh, I almost forgot. No. Actually, no. There's something you're supposed to do before this. You actually have to vi make file because kernel sources as it comes out basically installs everything, your kernel images on the slash partition, which is where you don't want to put them. You want to put them in the boot partition. So you use vi and you use the slash command and you search for boot. And you'll, now in this one, of course, there would be a pound in front of that if this were a fresh kernel install. You remove that pound so that your kernel installs in the correct place. Otherwise, it'll put everything in the wrong place and it won't work. You'll be back to the old kernel. So anyways, you do that, and then you do, make dep, make clean, make bzlilo. That basically makes it does it automatically. And I like to use the or and the and op. Basically, this says if this thing works, do this. Otherwise, basically, if you don't have the and there, it'll just do it. And if your kernel compilation is a failure, you won't see the messages. So basically, if it's say, oh, your kernel's too large and your system's not going to boot, you want to make sure that lilo works properly, or it will not function properly. So it'll warn you if your kernel's too big or if there's something that's missing. So anyways, and then you do make modules, and then the semicolon, and make, you can type this on different commands if you really want to, modules, I may spell this wrong, but that's all right, underscore install. And I just, for grins, I like to do semicolon reboot. And that reboots you automatically. That I'll let, for those of you that want to copy that line down, I'll wait a little bit and continue talking. So your kernel compile will take anywhere from 2 hours to 2 minutes, depending on your processor. And then you'll basically have a kernel that's ready to do IP chains. Basically, once you do that, you've got the beginnings of a firewall. Now, cd ls, where did I put that sucker? Cd. And this text file that I'm about to be using is available on the website. Which one? There we go. It's ipchainsdocs.txt. And again, this covers everything we went through in the kernel. But basically, I'm going to go down, and we're going to start covering the most important part of this, really, which is actually the script. Let's keep going down. Here's the script. This is a startup script, basically. You probably don't want to actually do this until you've debugged and whatnot your script. But this is a real nice script that will allow you to start and stop your firewall using System 5, mind you, syntax. What you do is you take this file and you put it in SUSE in the sbin init.d directory, and you make it executable. Then, if you want, what you do is you basically go to the appropriate run level. I'll just control Z this real quick. Cd slash etsy slash rc. This is where Unix does all its booting stuff. rc.d. And your run level, depending on distribution, may vary, but you'll look here and you'll see, basically, you'll see RC0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Well, mine happens to be in RC2.d, which is the normal multi-user networking mode. So you cd to the RC2.d directory, and then, this is going to seem kind of weird, I don't know, for those of you that have done it, it's no big deal. You have to create a symlink to the thing that you want to run. And in this case, if you do an ls, you'll see there's all these numbers. There's s and k. Start means start, and k means kill. And you have to make them capital S and 20, or it won't work. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a symlink here to the init.d directory where I left the other file and made it executable. So basically, you do is ln minus s, which is symbolic link, and I'll return it up so you can see it. And then the actual hard file, which is slash sbin slash init dot d space slash, actually, then just the file name, which would be s. And now you may wonder, which one do I do it as? I recommend starting it. Some people say start it before networking, and some people say start it after networking. I don't really know, so you can kind of decide where you want to put it. I like to start it after networking simply because I don't like to have a firewall up until the network's up. Some people say, well, that gives them, you know, a quarter of a second to get into your firewall. Well, I don't know. I'm not worried about it. So I basically am going to put it right after networking. So I'm going to do S06 and then firewall. and then that'll create the symlink. So the next time I reboot up the system, it'll actually go through the script that I showed you, and it'll see, oh, it's a start option, which the system passes the start option, and then it'll run this file. This will make your firewall automatically load. Don't do this until you know that it works, because if you do, you may have a very non-working system which you can't connect to except through the console. So anyways, that's briefly to show you how to auto-start the firewall. FG. Okay. So basically the script, I'm going to go real fast. Just copy this one because it's just a standard shell script. The start is the start command. The stop is the stop command. You need to make sure that you have the proper linking. I'm going to move my little cursor up here. You have to make sure that there's actually a file in the directory called firewall on, or whatever you call it, because this script calls the other script, which is what I'm going to get to next. And the same thing for firewall off is, again, it's something that shuts down the firewall. You don't have to, but I basically just turn off all the interfaces when I shut down the firewall so that nothing can go in or out if I'm restarting the firewall. You don't have to. And restart is just for restart anyways. There we go. FG. And the next thing I'm going to get into is probably the most important part, which is actually the IP chains firewall script itself. And IP chains. There we go. Here's the IP chains script. I'm going to start up at the beginning here. Basically, this is the script to start the firewall. These mod probes are vitally important. If you want FTP, IRC, real audio to work, you need to have these parameters in there. Basically, because FTP does some funky stuff and this fixes it. I recently found, for those of you that do Microsoft stuff, like the Microsoft Gaming Network, there's actually a module that allows that to work with the Linux firewall. Previously, it didn't work because Microsoft passed the IP address wrong. Anyways, just a quick note. It's on Fresh Meat. I just search for Microsoft Gaming Network if you're looking for it. The next thing, this basically says, I want to do IP forwarding so that you need to be able to take traffic from one interface to the next. If you don't do it, it won't work. This next script basically says, I want to make sure that you're going to do TCP SYN cookies. I'm not going to explain it. It's just a security precaution. This basically says, for every single interface or whatever, do not accept redirects, which are basically one of a hacker's favorite tools for doing bad and evil things to your computers. Again, the same thing. Next one basically says don't do any source routing, another bad thing to do on a firewall. And this one right here, the IP chains minus A forward, and basically what this is, minus S is your internal network, saying anything going from the internal network out, I want you to mask. I want you to rewrite it as if it's going out to the internet. You have to have this or your firewall will not work. Basically, nothing will happen and you won't see the internet. This by itself is a very poor thing. I know a lot of people who do just this and call it a firewall. It is not a firewall. It is simply an IP masquerading box and provides no protection. So this statement by itself is not a firewall, contrary to popular belief. Basically, this next one basically says, I want you to accept, let's see if this is the right one. Basically, this one you don't need. It's just an error. But basically what this basically says is, I want you to accept things that are bound to the internal interface from my internal network, basically what that one says. You don't really need it. I'm just explaining the rule for you. But the most important ones are right here. This one right here. Basically, this IP chains minus A input minus I TCP minus S is myhost.com minus D is the IP of the external interface, 22, and accept. What that allows you to do is, that allows you, if you want to remotely manage your firewall, I don't recommend it unless you're using RSA keys or something. This next one right here will basically prevent any inbound connections that are TCP to your firewall. In short, it prevents any connection attempts to your firewall's external interface. So the only things that are allowed are replies to things that you do out. This does not protect you against UDP. This is only for TCP. So, for instance, if you want to basically protect against a lot of the TCP-based attacks, you know, people trying to connect to your internal web server. These next ones, and I found out that there's a new one that you need to add, basically block NetBIOS UDP stuff and TCP. You probably don't need these two because I'm already blocking all SYN connections, so people can't just try to do scanning for shares on your system. However, there's four, I think it's 435. I'll have to check it at the end. There's another port that they use, Microsoft, I just found out today, that you need to block as well. I think it's like 435. It's an additional port for IP chains. And what basically this script will do is it will allow you to go out and do almost anything you want, but it will not allow people to come into your internal network, which for most home users is probably your default setup. Now, there are a lot more complicated firewall rules you can get into. A default deny firewall, your script is probably going to be anywhere from, I've seen the shortest about 25 lines, the longest about 200 lines, depending on what you're trying to block and allow. A real quick security concept, a default deny firewall says, I don't allow anything through unless I'm explicitly told what it is. So basically, you have to define each protocol you want to allow. Well, for your average home user who's using a gaming or Microsoft stuff, well, that's kind of hard because they don't exactly tell you what ports things are running on. For instance, NetMeeting, you know, uses a H.323, but it also uses a random incoming port, which it won't work with this anyway. NetMeeting just doesn't work with this kind of a firewall, by the way. You can get the sound out, but it doesn't come back in. Anyways, this is a basic script. Again, you have to understand that this script is not going to protect you in high level. It'll protect you from stuff coming in on TCP and any of the known UDP problems, but it's not going to protect you against any of the new exploits that might exist. Say you have a UDP port on, you know, whatever, because if someone, what they can do is they can actually go to the external interface on your firewall, and they can use that as a default gateway, and they can actually get into your network if they know the exact port and IP address that they want to do. So you have to remember that this firewall is much better than, say, a Microsoft box that is not protected, but it is not the end-all and be-all in security. It's a very simple firewall, and just as another option, basically, on the end of any IP chains rule, you'll notice the minus L. That basically logs the connection to syslog. So your var log messages, if anyone ever connects on SSH port, it'll say that in the var log messages. It'll say, so-and-so from such-and-such an IP address connected on SSH port. You can also use it for denies. The only problem with, I find, basically ports, I don't bother logging the denies on 137.139, DNS and something else because your log files get enormously large. Especially if you're on a cable network, there are lots of dweebs trying to mount your shares and stuff, and I don't really care. I mean, I'm just blocking it, and that's all I really want to know. Now, if you want to see who's trying to do it so you can, you know, again, go on a quest, you know, well, fine. But you're going to have very long log files, so I don't recommend it. You can. It's an option. It's a personal preference as to how much information you want to know. Basically, here are some really good links. I'm going to show you a demo of Webmin. Now, keep in mind, you never keep Webmin running all the time. You only run it when you first are configuring your firewall, and then you turn it off. So we're going to go into X real quick now, and I'm going to show you Webmin. It's a little bit more straightforward than the... What time is it? What? 1250? Okay. While I'm, any questions real quick while I'm firing up Webmin? Any questions from the audience? The URL is, I'll just type it again, www.geocities.com/TMUN. That's the URL. That's going to go away because I'm going to type in Netscape. Webmin's just a really nice way to have it basically do the IP chains rules for you without you having to know the actual command syntax for IP chains. Now keep in mind that just a second, it takes a little while to come up. A couple caveats on some of this stuff. You're probably going to have to compile your kernel a few times before you get it right. You usually make mistakes. Don't be surprised if your first two or three kernels don't boot. It's just part of life. Stop. Damn it. Just a second. Unfortunately, this is the stupid version of Netscape. Yeah, I guess. Just a second. This is taking too long. Okay. Actually, I'm not on the internet. This is cached. Now, the nice thing about Webmin, I have configured it to use secure sockets layer. That's why it kind of... Actually, I have to HTTPS. It's going to bitch. There we go. Damn it. Just a second. Control backspace. There we go. Okay, good. And su minus tmun. Webmin's really easy to install. The URL is available on the text file on my website. It's www.webmin.com. It's a nice utility just to kind of do stuff. Just a second. Yes. Yes. Basically, you use the module and it works. Use the insmod command that was in there, the insmod ftp.o. Active will just work. The only problem that you have to keep in mind, if you want to allow active FTP, you must remove the syn rule that I created, that J minus not Y or whatever, because it will block the incoming connection from the server. So that one rule you'll have to turn off. But just use passive FTP. Get NCFTP and use passive. I mean, every client in the whole world supports passive FTP. And if they don't, you know, we'll shoot them. I mean, that's silly. I mean, unless you absolutely have no choice, you know, but there is a nasty IP chains data hack that'll fix that, but you kind of have to patch the source code, and it's very unpleasant. There's also a really nice IP chains firewall creator link for you. Basically, you go to the web and you say, here's how I want my firewall to look, and you hit OK, and it generates you a shell script. That's, again, in the link that I created. If you really don't want to deal with it and want to have a really nice default deny firewall, you can do it in about 10 minutes. There we go. Let's see if it's going to bitch. HTTPS. Have to do HTTPS when you're using a secure server. There we go. This is actually the Webmin thing. This is all occurring across an SSL channel, by the way, so people couldn't snoop this if you were using it across the network. I still don't recommend it because it's a Perl script that runs as root, so it's just simply not a good idea to leave this thing running. So I just mention it, though, because when you're configuring it, it's kind of nice. Basically, you go to your networking option, and you also have to install the IPChain's Webmin module, which is really easy. I won't show you now because it's just I don't have time. This is the IPChain's firewalling module. Basically, what it does is it it allows you to type in your rules for you. There's currently no chains found. There's a couple configuration things you need to do with it. You actually have to click on the module config here and create the name of the text file that you want to save the rules to, which I've already done here. The first time you'd load it, these won't be loaded. So anyways, I'm going to add a couple rules just to show you what it does. Basically, we're going to do, there's three policies in IP chains, input, output, and forward. I generally only concern myself with the input chain. You can do things with the output chain, but for most basic usage, input is what you're concerned with. Basically, that's things coming in. If you're doing default deny firewall, obviously you're concerned with the out as well. Basically, you'll see there's a couple here. Basically, say I want to create a new rule. Well, I hit create new rule, and this is kind of nice because it's visual again. And there's other IP chains things. Basically, you can use the host network, which is my source. You can also use the not attribute. This is really powerful if you want to deny, say, I want to allow nobody except for my particular one host to come. So you write one rule that excludes the whole world except for your IP address. That's what the not is good for. You've got your source, you've got your destination, you've got your protocol. And the nice thing about this is all the protocols are kind of listed here. Now, a lot of these you probably aren't going to know what they are, but it lists them so you can just see what they are. I'm going to say ICMP. I'm going to basically say, and you have to keep in mind when you're doing IP chains, you have to keep your interfaces straight. I normally basically, you have to keep your what they call the wild side interface separate from, say, your safe interface. Because if you get your rules backwards, guess what? Your firewall is useless. So you have to make sure that you choose the appropriate interface for the rule that you're creating. And this is critical. You have to do this. In my case, it's ETH LO0 because I don't have a network up right now. But in most cases, I always use ETH0 for the external and ETH1 for the inside. Now, it doesn't matter which way you do it. But you have to remember that when you create your rules, keep your interfaces straight. Because you'll be very frustrated for one, and for two, things won't work, and three, you'll be... See, here's basically your target. You have three kinds. You've got accept, deny, mask, reject, and return. Now, if you want to be fairly nice... Like, say you're, if you want to be mean, you just choose deny. Basically, that just drops the packet and doesn't tell the sender that they did it. It's great for port scans because it really annoys people because they don't see you're there. The target of mask is only applicable to forward chains, which we're not doing. And finally, there is accept, which means accept it. And there's reject, which is a little nicer. Basically, reject says, I got your packet, but I'm not letting you connect here. Now, people can use that for denial of service against you, but if there are certain cases where you want to do it, I'm just going to put deny, and then I'm basically going to say host, I'm going to do, the source is, the world is 0/0. That's just a way of saying everybody else, and you can actually use a host or a network, and I'm actually going to say, basically they're going to try to go the IP address of my external interface, which I'm going to make up a number, 192.3.24.5. Basically, I say, now, another confusing thing with IP chains, you've got source ports and destination ports. You generally never want to filter on source ports. It's just like IP addresses. Like, for instance, when I send out an HTTP request, there is a source port of 1024 and a destination port on my host of 80. If you try the first time you do an IP chains rule set to filter on source ports, nothing will work. Source ports always change. They change between 1024, the random numbers between 1024, I've seen them go as high as 1500 in terms of ports. So you never filter on those. You only filter on destination ports. In this case, 80. And of course, we don't want to use ICMP because there's no such thing as ICMP port 80, so we're going to choose TCP, whatever. Anyways, and then you just basically, type of service, that's some of the stuff. And again, you just see this, and you just choose append rule. And now what this actually does is it takes this particular thing and it adds it to the file that I showed you in the Etsy directory. There'll actually be a new rule in there that basically shows you what it is. Again, this is just a simpler way of doing it. I don't know if I recommend it, but for those of you that prefer web-based interfaces, it's kind of nifty because you don't have to do the syntax yourself, and you'll know that it at least will be right. I mean, because if you get things backwards in IP chains, bad things happen. Anyways, that's pretty much all I really have time for. Is my next speaker here yet?
Yep.
Okay, well, I'll get out of your way then. And thank you for your time.